Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, you wonder why they wouldn't just pick it up on the clock where it left off.
Yeah,
that's the part. I mean, what happens if there's a change in the last 6 or 7 minutes of that game that ends up affecting somebody's playoff chances dramatically? You could argue that team got an extra 8 minutes of a season to change its own fortunes.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's the part I don't get. I understand why you keep the goal. It happened, but I don't understand why you give Dallas 8 more minutes to make up the deficit.
You pick it up right where you left off in that game. And if lineups have to change, that's all fair enough. But, it's either a makeup game and you start from scratch, or it's not, and you pick it up where you left off. Why they get that extra 8 minutes to try and come back? That's an interesting one from the NHL. I'd like to hear an explanation on that.
Do you know when Fisher left that game in Detroit, did they start it over again or did they pick it up where they left off? Because it was later in the game, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember what they did with that one. My memory is not great, but this was different. This was right near the start of the game. I mean, not even halfway through the first period. So we'll see what happens. I think the NHL is just praying that it's a clean outcome and that nothing significant happens in the dying moment.
Ryan, you're in Chicago. The Blackhawks, right now, while they're locked up in third, very unlikely they're going to catch Colorado. And Colorado might catch St. Louis. You got to think, what's the update on Taves and Kane? Are they going to be ready for the round one?
Well, yeah, the belief is both players will be ready to go for the first round of the playoffs. I think Patrick Kane, if this were the playoffs right now, would be playing. He skated the last couple of days really hard. I think he's 5 days now on the ice, so I think they're just being cautious and letting him rest. But I think Jonathan Taves, the expectation is he'll be ready to go too. He's supposed to start skating later this week. But I can't imagine that Taves is going to be close to 100% when the playoffs start. So that's a huge disadvantage for Chicago to have their number one center and their heart and soul guy banged up right from day one of the playoffs. And as we know, the Western Conference is not going to be easy to get out of. Nobody's coming out of this conference unscathed physically. So tough for the Blackhawks to start behind the eight ball like that.
You look at, you know, the Western Division, and Anaheim now, they got a chance to catch St. Louis. Should the Blues be concerned with how they're playing this late in the season?
I think so. We were kind of talking about that among the media today, and the regular season is important, and it's the seeding, and it's all of those things, but really it comes down to who gets hot at the right time. So you could make the argument for a team that's playing red hot towards the end of a season that, as opposed to a team that's maybe rounding into form and on the upswing towards the end of a season, that who's that better for? Do you want a team that's won 9 out of 10 games to hit the playoffs, or are they kind of due for a bit of a letdown? So, look, I think it's the grand reset button. It really is. The start of the playoffs is like hitting the reset button, and I think some teams that get good goaltending early end up getting out to good starts in the playoffs, and I think more than anything it can be about the goaltenders early on.
Well, and the other thing is Boston last year, they limped into the playoffs, only winning three of their last 10, made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. So I'm not sure there's, ask Vancouver fans, when they were finishing first, they'd go into the playoffs 8-1-1 and lose in the first round. So you never.
Yeah, well, if you're the Blackhawks, how do you feel about the possibility of either playing the Colorado Avalanche, who are playing, I think they're 7-1-2 in their last 10, they have those young guys playing so well, getting some goaltending, or the St. Louis Blues, a team that maybe isn't playing that great right now, but you still make the argument has the best blue line in the game and one of the best teams in the game. So the Blackhawks don't have nice-looking matchups. Nobody really in the West is going to, but especially with Kane and Taves hurt. It's going to be interesting to see if Chicago can squeeze their way through the first round because they're going to be in tough either way.
Ryan Rashog joins us. Ryan, it's funny, a lot of people have been saying Patrick Waugh is the major reason why Colorado's improved, especially with his, the argument here was that he had a no-name defense. And, I politely argue with people about, well, Eric Johnson's not a no-name defenseman, and Eric Johnson's not the guy from 2 or 3 years ago that people remember in St. Louis. He's a legit number one. Haidt is a very steady defenseman, and Tyson Barry, man, up and comer. That, you know, their blue line, they really revamped it. Johnson is now a top pairing guy. The coach, maybe they're getting more out of him, but he's matured. He's 25 years of age, just turned 26. You know, they put Barry in a better position in the second pair, and then they revamp other guys in Holden and Benoit and Saric. That's a massive rehaul of a defense core in one summer. Do you think Edmonton can do the same?
Well, I mean, look, what happened for them is at the high end, they improved. So Eric Johnson, who a lot of people weren't really sure what this guy was going to end up being, and I think Colorado got a lot of criticism when they made that deal because it was Shattenkirk who went the other way, and everybody knows he's turned into a real good young defenseman. So there was some criticism there, and understandably so. But defensemen take a little while. Sometimes they need to marinate. And what's happened is, they went from having a question as to whether they had any top-pairing blue liners at all to a very clear-cut number one guy that belonged in that position and deserved those minutes and that responsibility. So I don't see the Oilers having anybody sitting there ready to do that, ready to take that. They didn't have to go out and find top-pairing defensemen. They had guys that kind of graduated and matured into the role a little bit. I don't see the Oilers with anybody that's ready to take that step. They need to go find a couple of guys. They need to go bring in fresh bodies and at the high end of their decor. And that's a lot harder to do than crossing your fingers and hoping that a number one overall pick finally matures into form. So I think it's going to be a little tougher for the Oilers to pull off because I don't think internally they have the personnel ready to take that step.
Well, Colorado went out and signed guys, right? Corey Sarich, Benoit. Yep. That's what I'm saying. No, Edmonton, and they're not big name signings, but they're. And the thing is, Nick Holden had 6 years pro experience, right? Benoit was 30 years of age and played in Europe and played in the American League. Sarich, over 30, you know, guys on short-term contracts who had experience and not guys who were out of the league trying to come back in the case of a Grebishkov, yeah. You know, guys who had no NHL experience. I'm talking guys who had significant North American pro experience. That's what Craig McTavish has to do because I think the biggest downfall of the Oilers organization has been their pro scouting of defensemen over the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to say is who gets kudos for finding those guys, right? It's the pro scouting department, and obviously the general manager and the guys that have to sign the deals. But it's the pro scouts who say we need to look at this guy, we need to look at that guy. Hey, I found this guy here or there, and that's a fair criticism. It is because when you end up with Denis Grebishkov and Anton Beloff, and you know you make a trade for Philip Larson, although they had to move that contract, so fair enough, but. Just it's not good enough. There were no diamonds in the rough. There were no great finds. There just weren't. And they had a lot of swings at it too. They had a lot of positions that need to be filled and doesn't look like they uncovered any kind of gold. And that's pro scouting right there.
Yeah, that to me is the one thing that has to improve in this organization. And that's up to them. It's not up to the players. That's not up to the coach. That's up to the scouts. That is a major weakness in the organization that Craig McTavish has to rectify.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the coach can only do so much with what he's given. I've been harping on it all season long that this is one of the weakest decors I've ever seen in the league and certainly ever covered in Edmonton, and it's not good enough. And Craig McTavish knows it. He's admitted it, that he hasn't put the personnel in place for them to be competitive as a blue line. So he needs to change that. He has to change that. It's job number one this offseason. We'll see what we're talking about come training camp when it opens later on this year. We'll see if it's addressed legitimately or if they're going to sit there and cross their fingers. And if we're talking about Darnell Nurse with a legitimate chance to crack this blue line, it means they haven't gotten better enough.
Darnell Nurse, what about Marinson and Klefbom? I'm amazed at how many people just want to now roll out the red carpet and say these two are locks for next year. I don't think you could go in with those two as locks and Justin Schultz and honestly believe your team's going to improve that much.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. So that depends on how much work McTavish can get done on that front. If storylines are, is Nurse going to make it and is Klefbom a lock and is Marinson a lock and then there hasn't been enough work. There needs to be some legitimate competition for jobs in those spots. And I'm not sure if Craig McTavish thinks that as well, because when you talk to him about the blue line, he's using the word development a lot. A lot of it is development. I think they might believe they have the pieces internally to do it. that makes me a little nervous for Oilers fans, because these guys are a little ways away from being ready to do that and ready to be regulars. They need to go find bodies that can come in and play higher up in their lineup.
Well, Ryan, actually, RCN sent me a link. The Detroit game, they had played 12 and a half minutes. The Preds were leading 1-0 back in 2006. Yep. They started it over for a full 60 minutes. So
they did, eh? So there's a little bit of precedent there.
Yeah, so that's
interesting.
Makes sense. It's still interesting why they would start it over. To me, I think that's the benefit to the team that's losing. And ironically, which is strange, but in both cases, the team that was losing was unfortunately the team that lost the player as well. So.
And what happened in the
Nashville won that game 3-2.
Ended up winning, yeah.
Yeah, so
interesting. And with playoff implications attached, boy, it's
huge. Like huge playoffs for both teams, right? Something tells me it smells like a 3-point game for sure. Yeah. Although I prefer if it wasn't, but you know, and the other thing is Nathan Horton's not even playing tonight, and so I'd love to know what his stat line would read, because he'll be credited with a goal tonight. But 0 minutes played, and he'll have a goal.
Well, I hope his goals per game average, I suppose.
Well, that's the other thing. How can they have a lineup with him getting? Because on the official game sheet, it's got to say his goal, I think, or maybe it doesn't. I'd have to look at the game sheet now for the other one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely some awkwardness to weed their way through. I guess they got to do the best they can, improvise in a difficult situation. Everybody knew the game had to be called. They did the right thing. And now I guess they just kind of got to pick up the – it's like – you know what it's like? It's kind of like when the Oil Kings had that playoff game against Prince Albert, and they realized, the Oilers game was the same night, and they couldn't – they were trying to back up the start time for the game, but they couldn't because the NHL teams wouldn't move their skates earlier. And they went, okay, well, we're going to have to put special measures in place here. And if we'll end this in a shootout, it's not going to go to two or three periods of overtime. So sometimes things happen and you got to be willing to adjust. And maybe it makes the record books look a little funny. That's why there's an asterisk key on the keyboard, I guess.
Where are you going after Chicago?
I'm coming home. We've got Montreal-Chicago tonight on the network. So we'll broadcast that game tonight. So I'm here to work that. Playoff implications for Montreal here. They're trying to distance themselves from Tampa a little if they can.
They got a huge break.
They did. For sure they did. But they interesting that the Montreal didn't bring Markov, they didn't bring Emelin or Carey Price. They play tomorrow night on Long Island. So Michel Therrien elected to leave those players in Montreal tonight or yesterday and then fly them to Long Island and meet them there. He wants these players to get rest and didn't plan on playing them in the back-to-back, so he just didn't even bring them. So they're going with Budaj and a little bit less experience on the blue line tonight against Chicago, hoping to run the table on their last two against the Islanders and the Rangers.
Wow, interesting coaching decision. Now, is Markov and Emelin that hurt, or they just rest?
No, they're resting. Yeah, they're resting because it's a back-to-back situation. Now I think Emelin might be banged up, but Markov, Markov's a little bit of an older player now. Carey Price, they don't want playing the back-to-back.
Yeah.
He's done this before. He did this earlier in the year against Boston, left a couple guys at home and then met up with them and they played and it worked. Mm. Budaj got a win against Boston. And so he's doing it again here, trying to spare his guys and keep them fresh for the games they feel strongly they can win.
Interesting strategy. We'll see if it works out. Thanks, Shogger. We'll be watching tonight.
Okay, buddy. Take care.